The NO File, the ultimate Saints podcast with Nate Lundy.
It is time to talk Saints. Let's do it with Barry Herstis, BigEasyBeliever.com. Barry, let's start here. As you watch this team throughout the preseason, the last 6 weeks of training camp and all of that, what kind of letter grade would you give overall for what you've seen out of the Saints?
I'd give them a letter C. I think the defense has improved greatly over the last two seasons, based on what we've seen. Signed some quality free agents. Nick Fairley, defensive tackle. James Laurinaitis, former linebacker, also with the Rams. And we saw signed Paul Kruger, formerly at the Browns and the Ravens, edge pass rusher, who looks like he'll be able to make some solid contributions coming off the edge. So they should be improved on defense. However, The offensive line is a god-awful mess right now, and the Saints are basically trying to put a Band-Aid over a wound that needs to be stitched. It's the only way I can describe it.
Well, I've got to think, Barry, that's frustrating when you talk about, Drew Brees, who, 37 years old, he's not getting any younger. I mean, we know he can kind of scramble around a little bit, but you've got to feel like you need something better out of that offensive line, right?
Oh, absolutely, and without question. And it's going to be a recurring theme all year. Last year, that same offensive line where a lot of the same players struggled with quicker defensive ends and pass rushers specifically who are adept at coming off the outside edge. I mean, they've got one coming up this week in Khalil Mack of the Raiders. You're going to see that's going to be a recurring theme with the New Orleans Saints. They're going to be an elite, high scoring offense, but that's only going to be in the games where they're able to protect 37, soon to be 38-year-old Drew Brees.
When you look at this team, let's talk about the defense here for a minute. You talked about some of the signings that were there. Dennis Allen now as the defensive coordinator. In addition to those signings, just overall, Barry, where are the bright spots on the defense, obviously in a division where defense is extremely important?
I think there's a couple guys. Delvin Bro certainly is turning out to be one of the top covered corners in the entire NFL. He's only in his second year. If you're not aware of Delvin's story, of course, he's a New Orleans native who broke his neck in high school and would have played collegiately at LSU had he not broken his neck, and fought his way back, Arena League, and Canadian became a star in the CFL with the team there, and then has come home, and a lot of people probably weren't expecting much out of him, and he's quickly risen into one of the top stars on the Saints defense, and Pro Football Focus and those type of guys that keep up with that type of stuff rank him as one of the elite corners already in the league and only in his second year. So he's a guy I like. Cam Jordan, the Pro Bowler from last year, defensive end, I believe in his fifth or sixth year now. They drafted him originally in 2011 as one of their two top picks that year. He's probably been the most consistent guy on that defensive line and on their entire defensive squad. And then there's a linebacker that I really like personally a lot, which is the last year's rookie and second-year man, Stephon Anthony out of Clemson. He can play pretty much any spot in the linebacking core. I think you're going to see he'll eventually emerge as the guy that defense is eventually built around. I don't want to leave out. I should give honorable mention to Sheldon Rankin, this year's number one pick, who broke his leg in training camp and is out for the first seven games on injured reserve. He'll be back in week eight. But that's a kid to keep an eye on in the future. I think he would have made an immediate impact here in his first few games had he not broken his leg. So that's another guy to remember.
when we talk about the guys that you like, obviously some good names there, and kind of in each of the phases between the line, the linebackers, and the corners. But overall, are there still some weaknesses that have you concerned on that defense? You know, as I mentioned, in a division where you've got, you know, Jameis Winston, you've got Cam Newton, you've got a Matt Ryan, you know, defense becomes pretty important. And so is there a spot that you're still concerned?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got to look at the other corner. Keenan Lewis, the other veteran corner, was released. He hasn't gone anywhere. But just so they're going to put a basically what we refer to as a redshirt rookie out there at that other corner spot with P.J. Williams, who is an outstanding young corner, was an All-American at Florida State, and was their third-round draft pick last year, and sat out last year with a torn hamstring muscle, and he's back, and his one has emerged basically as the new starter at the number two corner spot. But, you know, he hasn't had a single snap of NFL regular season football. So he'll be tested early and often this week coming up against Michael Crabtree. Then the edge pass rush. I mean, they signed Kruger last week to fill that void, but you know, they lost Haole Kakaha, the young edge rusher out of the University of Washington, who was slated to be the starter, but tore his knee, the same knee that he tore up twice in college, tore up that same knee a third time his career, his future. So I'm going to go with backup Kasim Edebale was going to be the starter before Kruger was released in Cleveland. So looks like Kruger's going to be your starter at that position, at that outside edge.
Talking with Barry Herstis from BigEasyBeliever.com. Barry, talk about the running game for me. I mean, I know we all know what Drew Brees is capable of from a passing standpoint, but, you know, you got to be able to run the ball a little bit, try to free things up out there in the secondary. What do you make of the running back situation for the Saints?
Well, they've got a stable of running backs. I'm not sure if I would go out on a limb and say that any of them are going to put a strike fear into the hearts of NFL defenses. You know, Mark Ingram is now, you know, he's been with the team since 2011, but clearly he's not the guy that you saw at the University of Alabama that won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, he's never been that player since he's arrived in New Orleans. And, you know, maybe in his defense, he has played, he's had trouble staying healthy. He's never played an entire 16-game schedule since he's been with the team. He shows flashes of brilliance. He shows flashes of that Heisman Trophy winner that you saw with University of Alabama in the 2009 season. But, you know, for me to tell you, he's a guy that, you know, if you're playing fantasy football, I'm never going to recommend Mark Ingram to you, because I just don't think he's a guy that you can rely on, and he certainly hasn't been a guy the Saints can rely on. As far as the rest of the guys, I like Tim Hightower because of his story. You know, he's a remarkable comeback story, but you know, he's never going to be any more than your backup running back, backup guy. He's not a guy that you can get. If Ingram got hurt, you can stick him in there and say, oh, we can rely on this guy just to carry the load. I don't think that of him at all. Then there's C.J. Spiller, who's been a tremendous, tremendous disappointment. You know, the Saints signed him last year in free agency from Buffalo, and we all know, you know, if you follow the NFL, you know who C.J. Spiller is. You're well aware of his ability. His dynamic speed and playmaking ability. But since he's arrived in New Orleans, he's been a huge disappointment. Now, he has looked good in training camp. It appears that maybe he's overcome those injury issues. But, you know, he's also one step closer to being 30 years old. I think he's 28, maybe he's turned 29. So, you know, this is not the same guy who we saw, you know, a decade ago at Clemson, you know, breaking records and the Division I NCAA on its collective gear a decade ago. He's not that player anymore. I mean, he's still, you know, for his age, he's still a viable player, but he's not the same player he was in his first few years at Buffalo, which was one of the most dynamic young stars in the NFL.
Barry Herstis has been our guest, BigEasyBeliever.com, talking about the Saints. Barry, really appreciate the time here as we get ready for week one, and good luck against the Raiders.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me on.
After the break, we get a chance to talk to the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not. From the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like the Mike Mularkey. He wants to run the ball. Even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd, they want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay, but he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when that went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed, and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady Eddie, keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.